Sonny Pike was the wonder kid that had it all. He was the gifted young footballer destined to be a star, until it all came crashing down to earth. His reputation during the 1990s exploded, and there was immeasurable hype that came along with it. Dutch giants Ajax had swooped on him, he was touted as English football's Diego Maradona, and his legs were insured for £1 million at the age of 11. Coca-Cola, McDonald's and Paul Smith all queued to sponsor him, and he appeared on TV shows like Fantasy Football and Blue Peter. But bubbles tend to burst. If his rise to fame was quick, then the speed with which it was all taken away was double time. It all unravelled to such a point where the footballing boy wonder was stood on top of a bridge, known locally as Suicide Bridge, contemplating ending it all aged 15. These days, Sonny Pike is a London taxi driver living in Hertfordshire, and he runs his own football academy just off the M25. He is the ultimate cautionary tale for child footballing prodigies, and now he is telling his own side of the story in an explosive new book that was released on May 27th. This is the story of the greatest footballer that never was. Sonny, welcome to the podcast. Brilliant to have you on. How are things this morning? Because it's gearing up to a busy time for you, I think it's fair to say.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, all good, thank you. Just as I was just saying earlier, just the start of sort of my book being published, this, that and the other. I've been asked to do a lot of different podcasts and shows and whatever. So this is the week where we're going to start off with you. So this is the start of it.
Yeah, I've managed to work my way to first in the queue, which is quite something. So I'll gladly take that. But of course, we are here to talk about your story and your book, Sonny Pike, The Greatest Footballer That Never Was, which my edition arrived the other day. For those who are watching this on YouTube, kind of pointless holding that up if you're listening on audio, but the book is published on May 27th, and essentially charts the remarkable tale of exploitation, reckless ambition, and it really does show as a football fan myself the worst side of the game.
Yeah.
And having got the book yesterday and read through quite a lot of it, I mean it is all that and more. So for starters, I mean, it's your life. It's about you, essentially the wonder kid that had it all.
Yeah.
How was it for you recalling all of that and going into some really personal things and really personal events at the same time? Because it must have been tough at various stages along the way.
Yeah. Well, it's taken me 4 years to get it sort of. I was off the back of it. I went on the Talk Sport interview with Colin Murray about 5 years ago, actually. And off the back of that, a lot of people were saying to me, just off the back of this one interview, they were saying, Sonny, you've got to write a book, or you've got to do something, that sort of thing. I was like, okay. So, yeah, I've been working for, like, say, at least a good 4 years. Luckily enough, like, with social media, I've been able to get in contact back with people that I spoke to for, like, say, 20 years, kids that played in my football teams and this, that and the other. And it's been emotional. I ain't gonna lie. Quite a lot of it. Sometimes people tell me things I've remembered, I forgot, and some stuff I already remember. But like a couple of little things, like a friend of mine who was a football coach for me. We went over like a Butlins football not like a competition, and I completely forgot about it. And then I was at the sort of peak of my fame as then touched. Then I was like say 12, 13 still. And I got chased around Butlins. These kids wanted to beat me up. And he come around the corner and saved me. Completely forgot about that, really, to be honest with you. But there's so many of them things. If you look, obviously, in the book, there's so many of them types of stories where people just come and get me and want to and fight me and whatever else just for being famous. So, yeah, a lot of surprises in there. People telling me things I forgot. Tough to go back through some of the stuff with the family. But ultimately, like, it's helped me massively. It's helped me massively. The fact that I can get it here in front of me in a book and use that as a tool to try and help and maybe help other people now and come through the other side of it. It's been good.
Yeah, absolutely. Has it almost been cathartic in a way for you? Yeah. Just to get it all out there in some way?
Yeah, massively, definitely.
So the book opens up with you essentially contemplating taking your own life. I just wanted to mention that to give people a sense of where this is going when we start to delve into your story a bit more. Mm. But I'll start with sort of the growing up, the headlines, the fame.
Yeah.
And at the start, when you were Sonny the footballer, and those first headlines appeared about you and your goal scoring exploits, mm. I mean, what did football mean to you at that time in your life? Because I imagine it's pretty much everything.
Yeah, it was everything. It was off the back of 1990 World Cup. So if you're into football and you know Gazza with the tears and everything else, and we got to the semi-finals against Germany and whatever else. Yeah, so everything. I mean, every minute of the day. If I was playing football at school in primary school in break times, we used to play with a stone at the beginning, and then they stopped us taking the stone because we was going through the car park and hitting the teachers' cars. They changed that to a tennis ball. Then we're playing normal football. So I'd be football at school, after school, football all day at the park. Everything was just football. My house, my bedrooms covered in posters everywhere. Completely consumed everything in my life. And then, like you said, started to play for my first local team, which was Field End. I played one season there and found that I was just scoring goals. Just for as soon as I started, I was like, I think I was 49 goals in my first season as a kid, say 6 or 7 years old. And then, I started getting the local newspapers. Just over the first 2 or 3 years of me just playing from, like, say, let's say 6 to 9, just local, little, you know, used to get little local, little clips in the newspaper, little that big, oh, Sonny Pike scores in a team, Sonny Pike clear winner, or something, little things like that. So that's when it sort of just started to get a little bit known locally, I suppose, but it was everything to me.
Yeah, that must make you feel like, you know, on the top of your relatively high mountain at that point when you do see your name in those headlines constantly.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, I did, but it was more just like a local thing. Do you know what I mean? I'd go to the park, or I'd go to over the playing fields, and it would be just like, oh, he's a good little player, him, that sort of thing. And then that sort of led me into getting scouted for Tottenham, which is obviously a local team as well, for us in over this side. I felt good about myself, but I felt quite safe at the same time. It wasn't too much for me at that point. It was quite comfortable.
Mm-hmm. Because I was going to say, like, when you've got that level of fame, and I suppose this is where it starts to crank up a bit in terms of the headlines, and then TV crews come along. And you mentioned in the book about idolising players like Johan Cruyff, who wouldn't, and then the opportunity comes to go to Ajax. Is that when things start to, I suppose, go to another level, if you like?
Yeah, that's exactly really. I was, I think, about 10 years old at this point, and London Tonight come to Matthew Lorenzo. I never forget it. I think he was the guy that read all the done on the bit before, and they come, watch me in a game. I think we won, I want to say, like 5-2 or 5, and I scored a hat-trick, where I scored 4 goals. So it absolutely went perfectly. Like, taking on players, scoring goals. They put it on London Tonight. And as it came on, it was like, we're going to make you a star. You know, that's old song. I don't even know who sings it. But I'll never forget that song. And off the back of that, because I mentioned that I like Cruyff and all them stuff, because my dad bought me a video as a kid, a video, yeah, not a DVD or a video. And it had Cruyff, Maradona and Pele on it. And I watched it religiously. And so I was always into that sort of style of football. And in that interview with the London Tonight, I mentioned Cruyff and I mentioned those players. And being early 90s, when football wasn't exactly the most technical game, it was first one's free, tackle them, hospitalised, won't even get a yellow card. And I'm talking about technical ability and Cruyff turns and this, that and the other. It got attention. And from the back of that London Tonight, we had a call from out in Holland, actually, that I could have actually had the chance to go to Feyenoord or Ajax. And then I heard that news. My dad just rang me and said, look, you've got a choice to go to Ajax or Feyenoord. What do you want to do? And obviously, when I heard Ajax and Cruyff, their little connection there, I was just like, wow, let's go to Ajax. I couldn't believe what was going on. Because I think at that point, that was like 95. I was 12 then, 11 or 12. And Ajax was like, they'd just won the Champions League. And so, and with what team today? You say probably maybe a Man City today, or like a Barcelona, maybe an informed Barcelona. Do you know what I mean? Like the team.
Yeah, because that was what Edwin van der Sar, De Boer twins, Lampen Hall,
Canu, Overmars, Lippmann. I mean, you could just, the whole team was ridiculous. So it was just literally like a dream come true for me. Really, it was just like, wow, I've literally just gone to the top, and gone past everything. I've just literally gone straight to the top, sort of thing. So we went through the process of that. And that's when it did crank up. It cranked up to the next level. Blue Peter came out there with me. They filmed the whole thing. Transworld Sport was out there. They filmed the whole thing. Two Dutch camera crews was out there. They filmed everything out there. So I think everywhere I went for that week or so, there was usually three or four different sets of cameras with me everywhere I went. So that was new for me, considering I've only just done like a sort of one thing at home. And and it did crank up to the next level. But even in that early doors there, I started to sense how tough it is to have that sort of attention, and deal with all that sort of stuff as well as do the football. Because I was, for instance, the last game we played at the end of the week, we had a game. It was all building up, the training, building up towards this game at the end of the week. And I think it was like a 1 o'clock kickoff or something like that. And I think they wanted me up at 5 o'clock in the morning, where it was like still dark, just coming to get the sunlight up. They wanted me out in the cobbles of the streets doing kick-ups and this, and they wanted the sun coming up in the background while I did it. And it was like 5 o'clock in the morning. And then they took me to the flower market after. Then they took me to all different points, tourist attractions, with me with a ball. And I did like 6 or 7 hours work before I did the match. So that's like, do you know what I mean? I got into the match. We did the warm-up. We did a little jog across the pitch. And I was like, I could feel it. I was like, I could wish I didn't have to do that earlier. But that was a bit of confrontation there with my dad for the first time. Like, Dad, I could do without doing this. But it was just like, we've got to do what we've got to do. And that's what it's sort of, like you said, it sort of cranked. It just went to that next level. And when I come back, it just went even bigger.
Yeah, absolutely. And and one of the things in the key lines, if you like, from the blurb of the book is, you're the person that had your legs insured for £1 million at the age of 11. So I think that kind of shows how much was invested in you, I suppose, at that particular time in your life. But before you came back and everything cranked up a bit, was that almost where it was at its best, where it hadn't taken
a turn,
your mind was starting to turn a little bit?
Yeah, no, that's right. Yeah, it was. That's when it was at its best, because it was manageable. It was like I was getting plenty of football in, which had made me happy. I was not interested in being a celebrity or being well-known. Didn't bother me whatsoever. I didn't watch them tapes and watch 90s World Cup and think I want to be a celebrity at all. It couldn't be further from my mind. All I wanted to do, my ambition, was to win the World Cup and play for Liverpool or something like that. So at that point, like you said, it was at its best, because maybe I was getting a little bit of that, but that was just through the football side of things and it was more natural. But after that, that's when it sort of, the quotes in there are plenty of times. Great, the exploitation of it. When I came back then, that's when it just went really like, okay, what are we going to get out of this? What can we do with this? And I think that's when the thought process sort of changed for people around me and even for me, because I started to have to deal with this as a job. As well as playing football, I had this other job on the side. So, yeah, that's how it sort of worked.
Yeah, to pick out the line from the book, everything changed when Chelsea came calling. And then there's the signing with agent Eric Hall at the same time as well. And the cameras following you at Chelsea, which is one of the standout stories that I saw anyway, of just dipping in and out behind the curtain while you're trying to train. Just take us through that critical part, because that is essentially then leads up to that documentary that changes a lot of things.
So we're back from Ajax, and everything's gone like tenfold. All the McDonald's and the Coca-Colas and this, that and the other, I've done all that by then. And if we're getting to that documentary stage, right in the middle of that, I've done, because this is that closer to All Start when I'm 14. So between 12 and 14, there was a lot of other stuff went on. Like I said, that like I went Coca-Cola kid, McDonald's advert, this, that and the other, a lot of stuff. And then, like you said, a documentary came about when I was 14 years old with actually Greg Dyke, who ended up running the FA. And it was just to be another documentary. And I'm tired. I'm tired of all the of the social, not social media, the media. Yeah, I'm tired of social media and all sometimes. I'm tired of the media by then. And it's for me, it's just like, oh, another documentary I just don't want to do. But we're told, Greg Dyke, it's just going to be a nice documentary about how I'm progressing and what's going to happen and whatever else. And that's it. So it was called Fair Game. It was on Channel 4. And Greg Dyke and the cameraman come to my house. I'm not actually signed. I'm at Leighton Orient at that point, but not officially signed there. And I've been asked to go to Chelsea at the same time. And I've been training there a little bit. They come turn up with my ass with a camera. We turn up to Chelsea's training ground. Bernie Dixon was there. It was running it there. And I'll never forget, as we walked in, my dad's there and Terry's there, my old football coach, cameraman's there. And Bernie said, whoa, what's this? Like, you can't have a camera sort of thing. We're here to train. Like, no, it's just for home use. And on my headstand, I'm just thinking, I just want to go in and just want to play football at the end of the day. Do you know what I mean? So I've gone in, indoor sports hall, wooden floor, boom, 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 knocking the ball around, doing really well, feeling very comfortable. Considering I'm at Orient as well and I'm at Chelsea, I don't really feel any difference whatsoever, feeling as comfortable as I could. If anything, thinking that I'm going to start shining here in no time, really confident and happy, and telling my dad that as well, just leave me here. I just want to play here. I ain't worried about anything else. And and as you said, I'm training. And you know, like in the sports hall, they have the green curtain up the side and they pull it across.
Separate them up.
It was this guy all of a sudden popping up with a camera filming me. Then he'd pop back down up with a camera. And I'm thinking, I'm playing and I can see it from the corner of my eye. I'm just thinking, and I can tell everyone else is looking and like the coaches are looking. And I'm shrinking inside myself when it was going on. I'm just thinking, I just want it to stop. But anyway, we come out of this training session and the cameraman comes out with my dad. They're all happy. They're like, whoa, yeah. And Terry comes down. He's going mad. He's like, what is going on here? This is too much. This has got to stop. He's always been that one just sort of trying to sort of fight my corner, as say Terry. He's a massive part of the story and my life. And, so that was that. And then, and then that just takes me on another twist where we would just go, it goes downwards again.
Yeah, absolutely. Because then there's the article in the News of the World about Chelsea tapping you up. And you mentioned Leighton Orient there as well. And sort of how you might actually have signed for Leighton Orient without realising or knowing at the time. And then to take another quote from the book is that's just when you started to realise it hadn't all been for the best. Or certainly in your best interests anyway. When that article came out, was that almost like a, I don't want to call it a bombshell moment, but just like when the penny drops a little bit?
I was at the caravan with my dad and I was in my nan and dad's caravan and I'm inside, laying on the inside, nowhere they sort of wrap around on the inside. I'm laying on there. My dad said, he's going to the shop, the local shop at the top of the caravan at the site, comes back, grabs a newspaper, opens it up and I'm looking through the window. He's outside on a chair and I'm in, and he's opening it up and I can see him looking. And he's like, he's looking at me on the inside. And I've gone out there, looked at him, and I started to read everything. What it said, it says Chelsea, and there was a big picture of like a magnifying glass being poached. And I said, Dad, this ain't good. This is really bad for me. He said, I know, I can't believe what they've done. This, that, and the other. And he was unhappy. And obviously I wasn't happy. I went back inside the caravan. started looking out the window, and it starts, like you said, starts dawning on me. I'm starting to think, oh, this is really getting out of control. It's the media stuff I'm getting now is not even making me look good. It's making things look terrible. And I started to think that maybe, because what happened was in the time of the years of me doing the media, my mum was, and Terry was starting to tell me, like, he's not doing this for the right reason. And then I'm thinking, oh, this is my dad. Like, of course he was. Like, do you know what I mean? So I was fighting them two the whole time. Not fighting, but I'm in my mind, I'm trying to understand what's going on. And then when that happened, I was just like, that was a little drop for me, just thinking, oh, man, maybe they're right. And, that's why I started to think a little bit differently.
Mm-hmm. And then the documentary is aired and you watch it after that. And again, if we're talking about pennies dropping, then that's probably one of the largest pennies. Because then you realise actually what the focus of the documentary is about, and it's not about you.
It's just not in the most worst way that it could possibly be for someone trying to make a football career. I watched the documentary. I went out into the middle of the road after, and I was standing on a roundabout, and it's just cars crashing around me. And I half felt like throwing myself in front of the car then, to be honest with you, just to get my head from stopped, my head from spinning, because it was just out of control at that point. And my dad wasn't to be seen. And then the toughest bit was after that, about, I don't know, I want to say a month after, 3 or 4 weeks after, I'm training with Terry, because he was my one-to-one coach. So I'd train with my teams, and I'd have Terry to come with me, and we'd work on other technical bits and pieces. And I'm training over at my school, Chase and Enfield. We're training out on the playground now. And he comes over. I haven't seen him since. I ain't heard nothing from him for about a month. He comes over to the fence, same way they always used to come through, same way. And something like that. And I've seen Terry, and it was like one of those moments you're thinking, like, what's going to happen here? Walked up to him. We're talking, a little bit of dialogue back and forth. He said to me, I've got some more work for you. I was like, what do you mean? He was like newspapers and this, that and the other. I said, I couldn't believe it. Yeah, I was like, Dad, are you joking? Like, what's going on? Like, I can't do that no more. Like, it's done. It's over. And that was like the first time. I mean, I'd said to him a lot of times before that I don't want to do it, but this is that I was telling him no this time. Like, where before I was like, Dad, I don't want to do this no more. I've had enough of this no more. But obviously I want to keep him happy at the same time. But now it was like me, I'm like, no, Dad, I'm not doing it, it's done. And then he said something to me that, like, it ruined me. Like, even now talking to you, he said to me, well, I haven't got a son no more. And it sent shivers down my spine. Even saying to you now, I still feel it straight away. And I went, well, I just didn't know what to do. I just turned around, and I think I muttered the same word back to him, like, I haven't got a dad. And that was it. And I walked away from him, and I walked back to Terry. And then I think I even was about to swear or something like that. And Terry was like, what's wrong with you? And I told him what he said. And I just didn't, been throwing a ball at me. I think he just done that to try and keep me thinking, like, maybe stop me thinking about it. Do you know what I mean? He just threw a ball at me, and I just went off the wall and off the wall. And that changed. That was worse. That moment there was worse than any sort of, after that, I got refused from a few clubs and released and whatever else. You could multiply that by a million and it wouldn't come near to that. Do you know what I mean? Like, that was a massive, massive moment for me. It was just tough, 14 years old. Do you know what I mean? 14 years old at that time still. I think I'm turning into a man. I think, all right, okay, after that, I can do it on my own. But honestly, probably obviously wasn't ready to. I thought, okay, I can do this. I can get through this myself. But then obviously it goes on and goes on.
Like you said or alluded to before, there are a lot of key individuals in your life that are in the book, and since we're on the topic, your dad, I suppose, is one of the main ones. Yeah. And like I say, it's a complex relationship that I think, to put it mildly, from sort of, you know, you growing up no longer viewing your dad as your dad, but instead viewing him as your manager, which I think was the 97 Sky Sports Awards, wasn't it, where he was like,
yeah,
you know, tell Andy Gray you can speak to my monster agent. How do you describe your relationship with your dad to people? Because, like I said, it's so hard to sum up, I suppose, giving everything that's happened.
Yeah, he's my dad. I mean, and you know what? He's actually, there's parts of it there. You can think to yourself, was he exploited as well? Do you know what I mean? But he just didn't know how to control it and deal with it himself, which sort of backfired onto me. But like then that, I like to think that way sometimes, because that's my dad at the end of the day. I don't like to think that he just kind of into it purposely for that. But then when I see that bit I just told you about, when he just said to me, "I ain't got a son anymore," then that always comes back to my mind. but yeah, I mean, he was actually really good in some parts. In that, my dad was brilliant. Like he really helped me. He'd go as far as what he needed to do to help me do whatever I do. Like with my football, he had clueless about football, but he tried everything to get me the best of what I could get. You know what I mean? He would train me every day. He was really good. And he wasn't, a lot of the confusion people get with me, I think it was a pushy parent in the way that he made me train. He made me do football, which he wasn't. He wasn't at all. He just genuinely wanted the best of me. And he did do that. But it obviously, when these other things come off the back of my talent and these other like opportunities turn up, I think he just lost his way. I feel a bit sorry for him a little bit in one way, because it must have been tough for him. He didn't expect to happen what happened at the same time. Do you understand what I mean? It's a tough one, but he's my dad at the end of the day.
Yeah. I think that's what I mean when I say complex, because obviously there's the instance like that where he tells you, I ain't got a son no more. Mm. And that's, you know, and obviously anyone reading that will react to that in one way. But like you say, there are so many instances where he does, it's kind of out of love, but gets misguided, or he just goes down the wrong direction type thing. Just because, yeah, I suppose he gets, yeah, swept up in that wave. Yeah. Almost.
In the back of the book, I've put in there, in Dad's defense, is a message he sent to me through Facebook. Actually, I think he sent it to my wife, Rosie, to send it to me. And I put that in there just because of the fact I didn't want it to be like me just sort of grilling, like, oh, it's all his fault. Do you know what I mean? Like, because there's probably bits of it, like I said, he probably just got mixed up himself. But he's put it in there in his own words. I think he said that he just couldn't say no to anything. He just couldn't say no. Whatever it was, he just said, yeah, yeah, yeah. And I've sort of, off the back of that the Talk Sport thing I did about 4 or 5 years ago, I got asked when I come off that to do loads of bits and pieces, and I've actually went the opposite way. I just like, no. I was like, no, because I was a bit scared, a bit paranoid that all of a sudden I was going to turn into start doing one of these people just does everything. Do you know what I mean? So I was just like, no. Even a guy messaged me when I come out to Talk Sport. He had a car lot in Northwest London. Can you come outside my car lot and do some kick-ups? I'll take pictures and videos of you. And I'll pay you X amount of money. I was just like, no, I'm right, mate, your face. Just because he wanted to put it in his, like, whatever he wants to do with it. But do you know what I mean? Just silly things. Where years before when I was younger, I would have been outside that car lot going boom, 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 doing everything. Do you know what I mean? So, yeah, he just probably just couldn't say no to anything. He just didn't expect what was coming, really.
Yeah, no, which I suppose who can imagine being in that situation? Because certainly I can't.
Yeah.
This podcast is a member of The Bear, internet radio and podcast network. Find more great podcasts at thebear.live.
Make sure you follow Sportspiel on social media. Search for Sportspiel Pod on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or on LinkedIn. This is while you're at Palace. And then there's the other article, again, with your dad, kind of one of the subjects of it, where he labels you the ex-Wonder Kid.
Yeah.
Being labelled that instead of Wonder Kid, what does that do to you?
Yeah. So that was like a couple of years later. And in that time, from that conversation I've had with my dad, I haven't spoken a word since then, in between that and that document and that next piece coming out. Actually, from that conversation I had with my dad, I haven't spoken to him again since a day from today. That was the last conversation I had with him. And then, anyway, a couple of years later, I'm sort of trying to regroup and get back going again. Off the back of the documentary, I'm banned for a year from playing in any academy. It wasn't academy then, it was School of Excellence. So I can't play for any school of excellence because the EFA, they're in court. They're sorting out Chelsea and Leighton Orient. I think Chelsea asked for a £90,000 fee to get me. Leighton Orient asked Chelsea. And then, anyway, I'm trying to regroup and get going back with the football. Just me and Terry, really. I play for Loughton for a year, and then I end up getting a trial for Crystal Palace and start doing quite well. I start training, start feeling confident, is that any other. What's his name? Johnny Cartwright was a guy there. He ran the Crystal Palace team. He ran all the England 16s, I think, or 18s. He was a good coach. And he actually loved Ajax, which was a big bonus for me because a lot of the drills he was doing, it was a lot similar to the stuff I was doing at an Ajax. Very technical. And he'd stop the sessions a lot of the time and say, look, watch Sonny's doing this. Open your body. It was just small little grid work, little touches, very technical sort of stuff. I loved it. And they asked me to play in a game. That's what happened. I'm training there, and then the piece comes out that what you're talking about on the News of the World on a Sunday. It's a double page spread, and it just goes, you know, I mean, back then, especially, there's no social media. Whatever's on the newspaper is like literally going everywhere. It's really like massive. Like back then, it was a lot different. If you see the weatherman walking out in the street, you'd be like, oh my God, it's the weatherman. Do you know what I mean? Now, no one really cares, do they? Because everyone's famous, really, isn't they, through social media, whatever else. Anyway, it was massive. Off the back of that, when that comes out on the Sunday, and on a Wednesday, I play a game for Crystal Palace and against Tottenham. And I can feel the pressure mounting on me massively because I know 3 days before, the piece has come out and says, like, ex-Wonder Kid and this, that and the other. And I'm playing in the game. And like you said, I couldn't believe it that he even said ex-Wonder Kid. I was just like, what do you mean? I'm like 16. I'm 15. I'm 15 at that point. Yeah, I'm 15. I'm thinking to myself, like I've got to actually produce miracles in this next game I play because it's all in the paper. I put so much pressure on myself in that one game that I had to do so much. And it didn't work out too well.
Was that, because I suppose that almost translates to a lot of the games you were playing at that point, is where, because of the label that had been put on you, whether it was Wonder Kid or ex-Wonder Kid,
yeah,
you always put that pressure on yourself to do something amazing or do something outstanding in the game. And is that, I suppose that was ultimately at your detriment in terms of actually playing and performing when you're putting that level of pressure on yourself?
Yeah, when it was that level, especially like national, you know what I mean? Like I said earlier, when it was like more local, it didn't really affect me whatsoever because it was just like, didn't really affect me. When it's national and I know the difference, like people are stopping me in the street and asking me to do autographs and things like that, it goes up to a complete, it's hard to explain, but I think like an ex-professional football player probably understand, even though I've never been a professional football player, they'd probably understand where I'm coming from because it's like a different sort of bubble and a different pressure. In that game at that level, it done nothing but the worst for me. I mean, the ball come to me, and I wouldn't take a touch as well as I wanted to, and everything would just exaggerate by like a million. I'd be like, oh my God, what am I doing? I shouldn't even be on this pitch. And really, realistically, I'm just doing okay. Do you know what I mean? But like in my mind, it's building, and that's the actual game I talk about in the book, and I think I spoke about it in the Guardian before. Where I just got to the stage after, I think I played, I mean, just over half a game or whatever else. And then I just walked off the pitch and I started saying, I'm injured. The manager, I'm just walking off, just walked off on a diagonal across the pitch saying, I'm injured, I can't play no more. But it obviously wasn't a physical injury. It was like mentally, I was just shot to bits.
Yeah, which again, you can understand after being, you know, having all of that to deal with at the same time.
Yeah.
And then there's the court case. After that as well, which is just, I mean, for, like you say, for 15 years old, to then have that to go through, that's just so much for someone to have experienced in such a short time.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, that's it. Exactly. Ended up in the Strand, that big down there. So I actually didn't turn up I didn't have to go to the case, but my mum was going, my dad was going, Terry was going. It was quite a big deal. I think the newspapers was down there, like the Sun did pieces on it and whatever else. So it's just like, I don't know, it was just one of them times I just wanted to bury my head in the sand and sort of just try and ignore it if I could. But like, yeah, just the fact that like when you listen to it and you think about it, just talking to you even still now, it just makes you think, wow, like all that sort of stuff going so young, like what the hell, like just should be just hopefully just playing football and enjoying it and obviously working hard at the same time.
Exactly, and that's all played out in the public eye, like you say.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, family, I think Sonny's talents bits family up and whatever else. And I'm reading it just thinking this is just getting out of control.
Time comes to an end at Palace. Mm. And then, it's just a few months later that we come to the incident at Suicide Bridge that I mentioned at the start. Mm. How do you get into a position like that? Because you say, you know, the incident about you walking off your pitch with, I suppose, a mental injury, if you want an analogy. Yeah. But then for your mental health to get to a stage where you are contemplating taking your own life, were you just sort of in a spiral that you couldn't really get out of in that point?
Yeah, spiral's a good shout, because what happened after that game, I went home. I probably didn't come out of my room for about 6 weeks to a couple of months. Won't come out of my room. I'm on about, wouldn't even go downstairs, really. I'd come up. We had a loft conversion, which had a hatch on it that was open like that. You have to walk in through the stairs, open the hatch and go in. I used to go up there, put the hatch down and sort of barricade it. So I'd be up in the loft and no one, I'd sit up there on my own. And I stayed up there for ages, trying to sort of figure this out in my mind as a 15-year-old kid. I'm thinking how I can get all this courts sorted, things with the FA, things with my dad, things with my family life, things with my, just getting back training. I had so much going on. I'm just sitting up there trying to get my head around it. And I remember at points looking at myself, like big mirrors, a mirror in there, looking at myself, just getting so agitated with myself that I couldn't figure it out and I couldn't sort it out. I started getting angry at myself and upset with myself. And just sent me in a sort of depression, I suppose. Do you know what I mean? I just couldn't feel like, I didn't want to talk to no one about it. I didn't want to be looked at as the kid who's weak because I'm not happy about it. I wouldn't say that. I wouldn't say nothing. Keep it in. And after that, for a long period of time of doing that, I started venturing out a bit and we used to go over to the park, not playing as much football, but we'd go out on our bikes and when we'd go up to, I think we'd either go to Muswell Hill, we'd take it was still quite a while, but on the bike when you're a kid, we'd do it in whatever, 45 minutes, an hour, whatever, and go to the swimming bars there. We'd go swimming or we'd go into the West End. And then I think we went into the West End at that point. And on the way back, we went up to the bridge and I'd heard people talking about that bridge before and we'd mentioned it and people, this is a famous bridge for that. And we got to the top of it. And then as I say in the book, we got to the top of it at the bridge where it is. And I just put my foot on the brakes and all my friends just went, carried on going down the hill. And I just stopped and I thought, this is the bridge that everyone talks about. And I pulled over my bike and I walked back to it. And then it starts feeling really real. Like in my mind, all of a sudden, just with thoughts, it's there. And I'm there and I'm walking there and I grab hold of it and I'm looking over and I'm thinking this, that and the other. It'd be an easy way to just stop the headaches and everything else. And that's how I ended up there.
What stopped you?
Maybe I never had enough balls for it. I don't know. Maybe I don't know. But I don't know. I just thought to myself, I can't exactly tell you what exactly stopped me. I think maybe I was probably just too scared to do it. Generally, maybe I was just too scared to do it because I was scared. I was scared. I was like, I was holding on to it. Like I was thinking that I went there first out of just thinking about it. And then I got there and I started, it settled into my brain actually what was going on. And then I walked away calmly, got back on my bike and I started driving on my bike on the way home. And that for the first time in my mind, I knew I was up against like this mental, like they talk about mental health, this battle. Now I knew I was at war sort of thing. Do you know what I mean? And I really had to put, and for the first time at that point, I put football second. And I thought, right, I really got to get hold of myself here. This has got to become first before anything. And then that changed my whole football mindset and how, if I wanted to be a football player, it came a bit further down the list then. It was about just sort of making sure I don't do anything like that again. And I put my sort of my mindset first. And then, on that ride home on the way home, that's all I could think about. And then within a few days after that, I think it says in the book, in the kitchen, I have my old friend Daniel Buck there, Terry there, and my mum there. And we all sit there and talk about other options, other things that I could do at 16 years old. And even though I didn't really know anything else what to do, because I've always just been, everything was football. And I ended up going to Stevenage, but they were just like saying, son, just go there and enjoy it. Don't try and become a football player. Go enjoy it as if you're over the park, whatever else, and see what happens. There's other things you can do as well. So that was a massive like turning point for me.
We talk about mental health so often on this podcast because it crops up in so many athlete stories. And I think you mentioned in the book about sort of the level of stigma that there still was at that time. A lot has obviously changed in the subsequent years, but I suppose you can still see an element of that stigma that still exists today, particularly on for male mental health. Like you say, not wanting to be weak or not.
Yeah.
It's the man up persona, I suppose, isn't it?
Yeah.
If that very much dictated your life at that time.
Yeah. Especially back then. I mean, it's different now, isn't it? I mean, it still get better. I mean, I think, but back then, I just didn't want to be looked at as like someone who's like, oh, he's given up or whatever else, or he's scared, or what's he talking like that for? When really, to be honest with you, that my biggest strength now is the fact that I know that I've got that, and if I don't work on it every day, if I don't do something, I know I could easily go back downhill again. So I hold that as my toughest strength now. You know what I mean? I think I know where I'm at with that. Everyone's got their own issues. Everyone's had different things happen in their life. This is just my story, but anything could have happened to them. Everyone's got their own little things, and I hold that as my strongest card now. But that took a long while to think like that.
That's the thing. It's a lot easier said than done, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. Tons of experience, but it's different now.
Just to quickly bring in Terry, because you know, you've name dropped him a few times, and again, someone who features a lot in the story.
Mm.
Can you sum up what Terry means to you?
He's just the best thing I could say to Terry. He's just more than a football coach. He's just more than a football coach. Like, he was my football coach, but he's just more than a football coach. Like, I've said it before, but his mindset is ridiculous. Like, he's just like, not a big guy, a tiny little guy. I looked at him and you just think, like, I suppose he's an old man now, he's 84. That is he's a little old man, really, but he's just, mind is unreal. Like, that's the biggest gift I'd have got from him, because the way how I pulled it round was probably because having people like him around me, because I get to see him. He's like, no, he's got so much fight in him, and he's so genuine, and he does everything like for the right reason. So he's just, the best. He's the best friend. He's like, he's not my granddad, but he people think he's my granddad, but he's just an unbelievable friend. But because like, he's special because like, obviously he's not my age. He's like a lot older than me. But I just still look at him as like one of my mates. Do you know what I mean? And he's a special guy.
Yeah. How is he now? Because I know you mentioned at the end of the book that he's obviously got cancer, but.
We could be pushing 7-8 years now. We were told he got cancer, and we didn't think it was going to last too long. I think they told him, they gave him a couple of years, 6 months or something like that. And he's actually coming here today. After I've done this interview, I'm going to go and see him. He's going to come see me today. We're going down to the fish store at the bottom of the road. He likes there's a fish store at the bottom of the road. We're going to go down there. Anyway, he's an old man, but he's mentally immense. Like, I think, I don't know if it's the army in him or something in him or whatever else, his mindset is unbelievable. But he's good. He's good. Thanks.
Yeah. No, I mean, reading the book again, and you know, we talk about the negative so often, but in terms of like bright sparks, he is one of the bright sparks that keeps coming up throughout that story.
You're listening to Sportspiel, the Players Podcast.
On to someone else who kind of plays a key part into the story, and that's Joey, who eventually becomes your stepdad. And I suppose to say his background is interesting is one way of saying it. sort of the criminality side of things. When you find out, sort of discover who he is, I suppose. What's your reaction to that? But then how does that lead to you doing work for him, doing a bit of wheeling and dealing?
So at that point, my football is done. I'm at Stevenage, but I know after Stevenage is done, I'm not going to be going no more any further with the football sort of thing. I don't want to be a football player, put it that way. So mum's boyfriend moves in. We call him Joey, but I'm never going to say his whole name, full name, this, that, and the other else. Yeah, so it could be Steve, whatever. I'm just going to put him in there as Joey. Yeah. So as soon as he moved in, I was never too sure. I mean, he used to do like building work and whatever else. He had loads of tools and whatever else. And then a couple of family, he comes from East End, same as the rest of my family. And a couple of family friends over there said, like, he's into crime and whatever else. And he's a bit of a wheeler and dealer and everything else. I was like, I'll take that. And we'll see how we get on sort of thing. But then I think it's a bit in the book where I actually go on holiday, my first boys' holiday. And we're playing a football match. And we get to the final, and then all the kids find out a Sonny Pike, this, that, and the other, and end up getting a fight in one of the bars out there. And it all goes off. Someone tries to stab me with a stun gun and glass me and whatever else because of like my name and whatever else. And it all goes off out in Spain. And then through that craziness, I go to sit down at the swimming pool, right? And I've got this book that someone's given me. This Joe's meant to be in. So through the car, through more crazy, I think, all right, I'm going to get around the pool, I'll have a little read in the book and sort of chill out. And then I open up this book and it's just got like all this stuff about Joe. It just says in there about all the things he's done and armed robberies and all this sort of crime he's been involved with. And my head starts being like, what? Like, it weren't real until I opened up the book. Do you know what I mean? In my mind, because you don't see nothing, it's not like at home me talking a certain way or whatever else, you're just hearing things. When I open up the book at my time to chill out around the pool on the holiday, and then I go look at it and I'm thinking, what? I'm real. Like I was saying to my friends, like, read this. This is unreal. It's unbelievable. So when I go back, then when I come back from that holiday, that's what in my mind I know, like, yeah, this guy is what he is.
Yeah, serious player, I think is one way of saying it in terms of the crime world anyway. How do you end up sort of going to do some bits and pieces for him, because the Viagra stories are quite something.
I suppose at that point, and I'm looking for, I think it's quite important, the fact that I just don't want to be known as a football kid anymore. Yeah, and I'm doing what's around me. He's living in my house. Do you know what I mean? If he was a painter and decorator, I would have been just going painting and decorating. But it was what was around me. You are what's around you at the end of the day, I believe. So he's doing what he's doing. I'm at home sometimes, bored and whatever else. I'm saying, and then I've read the book at 17. I'm in awe of it in a little bit. It's not going to lie, because I'm seeing big numbers and big things, and I'm thinking, wow, like, this is unbelievable. Like, how's he doing all this sort of money and whatever else and not really doing nothing? So I'm probably in a bit of awe at the same time. And so I've said to him a few times, like, when he's going out for the daytime, oh, can I come with you? And he goes, go on, I'll come with you. Go on. So anyway, I end up going out with him. Just innocence, really. Just going out there, going to his friends' places, his cafes, restaurants, whatever else, talking, getting involved in that sort of banter and that sort of life. And then then little opportunities come up. Like you said, the Viagra story. A friend of his just had thousands and thousands of Viagras everywhere. So I just started taking some off him. And when I'm going into pubs on the weekends, I'm selling a certain amount of Viagras for £20 or whatever else. And it comes that the Viagra kid and whatever else. Yeah, and that's it. It just spirals, doesn't it, really? Luckily enough for me, that was really as far as it went. I started to go into markets and get buy counterfeit clothes and whatever else. And luckily enough, as I said, with ends up what happens to him later on sort of stopped me from taking it any further. Because obviously, if you've read the book, you see what happens to him later on. And that's another shocking moment for me, not in my football life, but in my normal life. I can, like, well, okay, let's put a line underneath that. Why not? We won't carry on any further with that.
Yeah. Speaking of which, what, his arrest.
Yeah.
And then finding out the police have been inside a house for 6 months, monitoring him, keeping an eye on things. And like I say, going through that and what him getting a 22-year jail sentence at the end of the court case. Is that another, I suppose, big wake-up call in your life?
Yeah, massive. Yeah. I was a wake-up call, understatement for me. That the fact that I was starting to, in my mind, start to contemplate that I was flirting in that sort of area, thinking that I've maybe got to...
Going down his pathway sort of thing.
And that eventually, you never know, And, massive wake-up call. I went to the court case and everything else, and... Just made me think that's not really my character anyway. But as I said, I think you are what's around you. That's what you become. Do you know what I mean? So yeah, that was just a drawing a line underneath that and sort of put that to bed really.
There's the chapter titled Rock Bottom, which I suppose obviously clue is in the name. describes what is in that chapter. But is that kind of how you felt at the time, because then there's the moment you spend in the cells. I suppose that moment where you've just got the silence and the nothingness to contemplate where you're going in life, as rock bottom as that is that almost what you needed at that particular time to switch things around?
I just done the football, and then I come out of the football, and then I'm trying to contemplate other ideas and trying to do this, that, and the other. That's not worked out. Joe's gone as well. So my all the men in my life, like my dad's gone, Joe's gone, Terry's there, but he's not nowhere near like what it was when we was younger. At that point, I've sort of left him, but I still talk to him. He might come around for Christmas, for instance, and not the same as it was. So a lot of the people, I'm really on my own, really, like what you said. Turns into it was in Hammersmith. Just my problem was when I used to drink, because I wasn't never a drinker, because I was always into sport. I was never like the guy going at the weekend, I'll have a drink and just like a casual drink. When I used to drink, I'd binge drink. I'm only drinking to get drunk, and I would drink, and that's what happened. I was in Hammersmith in like a school disco event, like all dressed up in school ties and whatever else. And I'm paralytic drunk, don't know what I'm doing. And I've been binge drinking, and it turns into a scrap, just a normal scrap in a club, for instance. And because the police station's next door, they just take us out and put us straight in the police station. And I started to think to myself, wow, like, I've been in situations before and something's gone wrong, and they just throw you out and that's it, sort of thing. And they're starting to question us all. They've got all my friends in there. I think they've got a couple of the other guys in there and whatever else. We're all in there in the cells. And like for the first little bit, we're talking and we're singing and we're like, oh yeah, it's all good. And then after about half hour, it all goes quiet and like the novelty's worn off and you're starting to think about it, and you're looking behind you and you've got a little blue sheet and a little pillow and that's it. Like you said, on your own, just thinking. And I start really genuinely thinking back through my life for the first time. Now I start thinking about all the stuff that's gone on, and like, and just thinking I can tell which way it's going, even though like I'm just held in the cells there for that night. And I think like Joe's doing 22 years of this, and I'm struggling with a night, really. Do you know what I mean? A couple of days, like, do you know what I mean? So I'm thinking, it's just a wake up call. I can't do that. It's not for me. I get to do my interview, and lucky enough, that's when the next good spark comes in. You see earlier, Rosie, she's outside. I speak to my phone. I give you one phone call. I spoke to my mum and said, Rosie said that she was going to come outside the police station, wait for me outside there, and then we're into the next sort of stage, really.
Yeah, exactly. Because I mean, this is the bit where I get to talk a lot about some of the more uplifting parts of the story, anyway, rather than sort of the exploitation and all the negative things that have been happening so far. And Rosie, that's the point where Rosie does come into the story, who turns out is quite a whiz with all things microphones, as we found out earlier today. But her influence on you, again, I say, can you describe it? But it's, again, something that's so much more than, I suppose, describing, because the impact she must have on your life, but also her dad, Keith. You say some lovely things about him too, and what he's done to you, or he did for you before he passed away.
Yeah.
Are they a large part of you becoming the man you are now?
Yeah, I think just as as an adult, and you get to, like I said, when you I've done quite a lot of thinking back, looking at things that had happened, and it's the first time, I suppose, in an adult world, in a normal life, I'd say, not football, not media, not nothing else, you get to see people like behaving like, I say, normally just going to work and up and every day trying hard and like a different sort of life. I've not really, hadn't really seen it. I've been a football wonder kid, and then obviously with Joe, he didn't, there wasn't no up and going to work and round the table after dinner and talking. There wasn't none of that. It was always just like, just sort of floating about and just go with the flow sort of thing. Do you know what I mean? So it was crazy ups and downs at that point. But then for the first time, I think I got to see just that normal stability where you just go home, go to work.
Without chaos, in. I suppose. That's what's popping into my mind.
Yeah, yes, yeah. It was just really nice just to feel that sort of normality. I was just dying to have that sort of stability in my life. And not just that, it's just a good sort of stability, but like Keith was he was a intelligent guy. Do you know what I mean? He was a really clever man, nice like family man, really done really well for himself and really helped out, done anything he could to help me and Rosie, obviously. Just a positive influence. Do you know what I mean? So it's just worked out. It just turned me. I just needed to see that. It was always in me, but I just needed to see that. And it sort of rebooted me to behave in a way that, and I never really got to see it before. I started to use like my mindset I had in football, like to get up and go in football. Like when I was younger, like I'm going to be the best. I'm going to do this, do that. In a normal life, where I hadn't seen that before. Do you know what I mean? And I started to think to myself, you know what? If I put my mind to it, I could probably start earning a few quid. Like I ended up doing a level two in carpentry and doing the knowledge. And I thought, if I could work hard, I could be a black cab driver, for instance. I did the knowledge, which is a tough process. And I started really putting my mind to sort of things before. And I call that, I think of the knowledge as like, I call it the rewire, because it sort of really got me going again. I had to really focus and study every day. I was never one for studying at school. But in these books, I studied for like 3 years every day. I'd go work on site. I'd come home and I'd get my books and I'd study lines from A to B. Leave on your ass, green lanes, right, Gibson Square, boom, 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 right through all the roads. And as I said, I called it the rewire. And everything just started turning around like positively for me.
Yeah, I really like the term the rewire, because it's a perfect description, like you say, of that moment in your life. It sums up how important role models are as well, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
It's having people to guide you.
Yeah, big time. I mean, I'm trying to be I'm not a role model, so I'm just a normal person, but I'm understanding the whole process, the things I've gone through. I mean, I teach kids now to play football. I understand the influence and how powerful it is to be in a certain way. That's why, like I said to you earlier before we came on, I was a bit nervous about some of the things I've spoke about in the book, because I don't want them to look at me in that way. But if I don't tell the whole story and the true story, they won't get to see the ups and downs. So I've had to be very honest and sort of put myself in that sort of light at the same time. But thankfully for me, I've been able to turn it around.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think a lot of people will appreciate that honesty when they go through it. And again, like we said at the start, often the best policy. And I think a lot of people will look at you as a role model in that light as well, considering what you've been through. In terms of where you're at now, I suppose with your mindset, is it easy to forgive, forget, move on? Because I mean, it's one of those things that we so often say and admire people who can do that. But again, also strikes me something that is a lot easier to say rather than actually do it in your mind.
Yeah.
Not sure where you're at in terms of, you know, putting things to bed, but still obviously, I suppose, talking about it in ways like this and being able to put it into the book goes a long way to closing that chapter, I suppose, of your life.
I just try and, there's certain things that can happen that are going to be always tough to, you always forgive and forget, but there's going to be certain things that are right and certain things that are just wrong. Do you know what I mean? But I just try and take things day by day. I just wake up keep my life as simple as possible. I just try and wake up and do something positive first thing in the morning. I just try and wake up, go for a run, do something straight away, and I find it puts me in that mindset where I'm not thinking, overthinking too much. Yeah, as I said, I go for a run. If I do something good straight away, then I think I'm going to eat well straight away. And it just, yeah, I just try and keep things life simple as possible. Yeah, I forgive and forget at the same time. But as I said, certain things, they're never going to, they are what they are. They're not going to change. But I just try and do my best daily.
And that, yeah, and in terms of like doing your best daily, mm-hmm. you alluded to the football academy before. Mm. Having that in your life now as well, that must give you a whole new sense of drive and purpose coaching other kids.
Yeah, nice. Brilliant. It's probably one of the best things that's happened to me for a long time. And it's weird. I was doing this book. I thought I was going to get it out a few years before and whatever else, but then things happen, getting the right publishers and everything else. And it turned out absolutely perfectly because I've been doing like the one-to-one coaching now for nearly like a couple of years. And I've really got to see the parent side of it. I talk to parents that are kids that are in academies. I've got a mixture of kids. I've got kids that are in academies. I've just got local kids that are just coming maybe just to, like a lot of their parents bring their kids to me just to help their kids for confidence, for instance, just to make them feel better and whatever else. But then I've got the kids in the academies and I get to see and sort of really key into how they're feeling and I get to help them as well because I've got a lot of experience in that sort of world. Do you know what I mean? So like the feeling coming back off it's brilliant. I do the session sometimes. I talk to the parents after for like half hour and they're like, "Sonny, how come you're talking for so long?" But I know I'm getting something and I get something that's good for me as well. I actually enjoy it. But and I know I'm doing something good for them as well.
Yeah, I suppose that's the good side of sport, isn't it? Because I mean, we've talked so much about the negative side of the game, but there's so many positives of football, like say for kids who just want to go along and have fun.
Yeah, yeah.
And it must be so great for you just to see that on a regular basis now.
Oh, definitely. I mean, last night I'd done a couple of training sessions. Kids, there was only six, good little players, and their parents just let them come in. They was in there, they were just running around for an hour, did everything I asked them to do. Great big smiles on their faces, love the game. Like there's nothing but love there for the game. They'll just do anything. Do you know what I mean? They're running around dribbling and trying the little skills and the little pieces I'll get them to do. Yeah, that's just the best part of it for me. When you can just see the innocence of it and like what I was back then. And that's what I'm trying to do now. I'm just trying to be the person maybe that I really needed then. Do you know what I mean? Even though I did have some good people around me at the same time, but at the same time, I just think that's what I'm trying to mould myself into, this person. Even though I've not done it, it's just naturally happened. Because I left football after I stopped playing football, after I was, say, 17, 18, my 18. I left football for, like, say, 10, 15 years, never went near it. At least 10 years. And then I've sort of just come full circle. Just from talking as well has helped me be able to do this. Otherwise, I probably would have just buried it and just said, no, I'll just leave football. But
For those kids who may be in a similar position to what you were, and I suppose also their parents at the same time, what advice would you give them based on what you've been through, what you went through, just to, I suppose, keep it more manageable? Maybe don't, I suppose, put all your eggs in that one basket, I suppose.
Yeah. My advice would be just to try and enjoy the processes. But I mean, it depends, because if you're talking about, when you say that, I'm thinking about kids that are in academies trying to be football players. There's a lot of pressure. So just try and take it day by day. Just try not to build it up too much, because it's so easy just to think that. I mean, just last week, I think I put a tweet on Twitter last week. It's like retain and release week. So the anxiety building up for that week there, people just think this might have gone on a year, might be 2 years. Is he going to get released? Is he going to stay? It goes through the whole family. It goes through the kid, goes through the whole family. So like, try not to over build it up in your head. Like this is the be all and end all. I've been at clubs. There's bits in the book there. I went to Barnet at say 15 years age. And then at 18, that was the last team I ever played for. So you can go back to clubs and go back. So you build it up in your mind. Oh, that's it. That's done now. Try not to build it up as such a big thing. At the end of the day, it's just a registry form just to say that you can carry on for another year. It's not a contract for a professional for £10 million or whatever else. Do you know what I mean? Just try not to overthink it and build it up too much in your mind, and just take it day by day. Just try and focus on being your best daily, and the rest will find, and you'll find your own way. And whatever you're going to do, just trying to keep that same mindset all the way through, because then that'll just follow through into your normal life, where hopefully, not like what happened to me, I sort of veered off into all sorts of places, and I never kept that same mindset. I didn't really care about myself too much. If I got in trouble, I was just like, okay, well, whatever, I'm not a football player, so I'll get in a bit of trouble. Do you know what I mean? Which is not the way to live. But I know that now from my experience. So, like, so if they can just concentrate on themselves daily, and just for the parents, maybe not to get too carried away straight away too much. Yeah, just let them enjoy their football and take it from there.
So there's a lot more being in the moment rather than
exactly
building up and looking to the future.
Yeah, building up in your mind that, like, oh my God, he's going to be a football player. Like, yeah, just being there. At the minute, he's doing quite well. Yeah, hopefully in a few months' time, we might see him progress to do this. That'd be nice. And keep working hard. I don't want people to look at these interviews and think to myself, oh, he's just saying take it easy, because I know you've got to work hard. To be a football player, there's no ifs or buts about it. You've got to work hard daily. But just don't overthink it and start thinking you're in a certain stage before you're there.
Yeah, no, I wholeheartedly back that advice.
Mm.
My final one then, what's next for you? Because, I mean, obviously there's a lot going on at the moment, what with the book, but have you thought about what else you might want to do alongside football, if there's any other ambitions you've got?
Just at the minute, obviously, so this is going to be the next few weeks, is going to be important just to work on this book and try and get this out to as many people as we can to sort of just to help them, really. And then I've got my setup. I'm over in Enfield. I've got a little indoor 3G football pitch I set, and I train the kids. I do one-to-one sessions or group sessions. But the idea is maybe to build it up into the next stage, maybe bring in some extra coaches, whatever else. I've got ideas of doing like online things for kids, like mindset. So they can, I'll give them little ideas and things to think about, and they'll check in with me once a week and say, like, okay, I thought about this, and maybe write some things down and give them a little few. I go into a few more schools and academies, talk to kids, just go to the next level of it, really, just to try and affect as many people as I can in a positive way.
Definitely.
Maybe a little Netflix documentary or a book, a film like that. That might be so kind of
cool. You're well on track at the moment, aren't you? So yeah, definitely see what the future holds.
Exactly.
Well, thank you so much, Sonny, for coming on to the podcast and sharing your story. Like I say to everyone, if you do get a chance to read the book, honestly, it's so well worth your time, because it's a powerful story, first and foremost, but I think there's a lot of takeaways and a lot of lessons for not even just being in football, but a lot of life lessons I think anyone can take away from it. So you should be very, very proud of that, of what the team have produced and your own story, and being as honest as you have been. And I urge everyone to go give it a read. May 27th is publication day. Sonny Pike, the greatest footballer that never was. So thank you, Sonny. Look forward to seeing what you're doing in the coming weeks, and take care. Thank you for coming on.
Alistair, thank you very much. Thanks for your time.
A huge thank you to Sonny for joining us on this episode of the podcast, and also to Reach Sport for organising the interview. Sonny's book, The Greatest Footballer That Never Was, is on sale now, and you can save 25% at reachsportshop.com. I'll give you that one more time, reachsportshop.com. As ever, if you enjoyed the podcast, please spread the word, as it's how listeners discover us. And you can also follow us on our social channels. We're on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. All of our handles are at SportSpielPod. That's it from us this week. Do look after yourselves, and you will hear from us very soon. Bye-bye.